We are on Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. We're up to the 17th line, the first set of two dots. So, if you remember yesterday, we were speaking about in the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah said, V'yas ha-kush, v'yas ha-karkar. We were giving all of these different examples in the Mishnah of utensils that are typically used for usher purposes, but you want to use it for a mutter function. That's what we usually refer to as a kli shemalachto le'isr le'tsorech gufo. That if I have something which is generally used for an usher purpose, but I found a mutter way to use it, so that was the discussion that we've been having yesterday and today in terms of whether that's okay. So this example that the Mishnah gave was in terms of these different types of threads and needles that were used for sewing on a loom, and you decide to use it as a fork. You want to use it to put your food on and to eat from it. So we said in the Mishnah, that would be mutter. So the Gemara explains, Tana Rabbanan, Paga shetimana b'seven, v'charara shetimana b'gecholim, im megula miktsasa mutter l'taltala, v'im lav aser l'taltala. Comes the Gemara and says that if I have, let's say for example, an unripe fig, and I want to put the unripe fig inside of straw, because the assumption is that it's going to cause it to ripen faster. Or let's say I have some kind of a cake or a biscuit that I put inside of coals. So the Gemara says that it depends. If the fig or the cake is partially uncovered, meaning it's partially exposed, so then I'm allowed to carry that on Shabbos. But if it's fully concealed by the coals or by the straw, so then the Gemara says that it's going to be problematic to carry. Because again, as we'll see in a second in the Gemara, this is what we refer to as tiltul min hatzad, that when I carry something on Shabbos and I'm causing the coals or the straw, in other words, the coals in the straw that surround the fig or the cake are muktzah, right? So the problem is that if the item is sticking out and I can yank the fig or I can yank the cake out without moving around the coals or the straw, that's okay. But if I have to start maneuvering and moving around the coals and the straw, that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a problem of what's called tiltul muktzah. You're moving something which is muktzah on Shabbos. However, the Gemara qualifies this. Rabbi Elazar ben Tanai Omer, Tochvin b'chusho b'charkar, v'heim inaros me'ilehem, comes Rabbi Elazar ben Tanai, and based on what we saw in our Mishnah yesterday, he says you don't even have to do this. He says even if the, in other words, he says all you should do is take your needle or your sewing thread or the examples that we gave yesterday, stick it into the fig or into the cake, and then just kind of yank it out, and then all the straw and all the coals will kind of fall away by themselves. This way, you're not going to end up actually. What was that?
Is that a
pesek
ratio, more or less?
Well, I mean, again, we're dealing with muktzah, which is only derabanan. So, whether the concept of pesek ratio applies to derabanan is a complicated discussion. But for our purposes, we're just trying to figure out: does this qualify as tiltul muktzah? Is this considered to be moving muktzah or not? So, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai, he says I have a much simpler solution for you. He says even if the item is fully concealed, all you have to do is stick your needle or thread into the coal or the straw, yank out the fig or the cake, and then have all the coal and the straw fall away by itself. And in fact, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, halacha k'Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai. That's what he paskin. That's what you should do. You should take your needle, thread, or whatever it is, stick it into the food and pull it out. So the Gemara asks, Lememra disavar Rav Nachman tiltul min hatzad lo shmei tiltul. Does this mean to say that Rav Nachman holds that when I carry something min hatzad, which for our purposes basically just means with a shinui, right? Again, this is not a normal way of moving around muktzah, right? Sticking a needle into an item and pulling it out and having the muktzah items fall away is not a normal way of carrying, and yet the Gemara still says that that's what you're supposed to do, and Rav Nachman seemed to sign on to this idea of Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai. That would seem to imply that Rav Nachman holds that carrying muktzah with the shinui is not really called carrying, because if it was, then this trick of sticking the needle into the thing is not going to solve anything if you think that it really is called tiltul. What's the problem with that? V'ha'amar Rav Nachman, ha'ifugla milamala lamata sharei mimata lamala asir. The Gemara says that, right, Rav Nachman says elsewhere in Shas, earlier and also later in the Masechta, that let's say I have a radish that's stuck in the ground and I want to pull the radish out on Shabbos. Now again, we're not talking about a radish that is fully implanted in the ground. That would be kotzer. That's like harvesting. Let's say the radish has already been plucked out of the ground, but I decided to kind of maybe just insert it into the dirt. So the Gemara says, am I allowed to pull that radish out on Shabbos? So the Gemara says it depends. If the thick part of the radish is facing downwards and the thin part is facing upwards, then it's okay. But in the opposite case, problematic. Basically, the issue is that if there's a high probability that by yanking out the radish, I'm going to be moving around dirt, that is a problem. So in other words, if the wide part of the radish is on the bottom, that's much more likely the dirt's going to get moved around. So don't you see from this halacha, the fact that Rav Nachman forbids you from yanking out a radish from the ground when the thick part is in the ground, that would lead us to believe that Rav Nachman holds that carrying something with a shinui for mukta purposes is also a problem, which is against what we just said before, because before Rav Nachman was signing on to Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai's idea that I can just stick a needle into the straw or into the coals and yank out the food, because somehow moving around the coals or the straw with the shinui is okay, and yet when it comes to the radish, for some reason Rav Nachman thinks that it's not okay. So what's the difference? So the Gemara says, you're right, Hadar be Rav Nachman mehahi, comes the Gemara and says that Rav Nachman must have retracted his original position. In other words, Rav Nachman, in the Gemara that we just cited, this statement about the radish must be not true. In other words, it must be that lahalacha, Rav Nachman really holds that tiltul min hatzad lo shmei tiltul. It really must be that Rav Nachman actually subscribes to Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai, and he holds that that if you're carrying or if you're moving something with a shinui, that's okay. So that means that this statement about the radish turns out to be shalo kahalacha. It turns out that at the end of the Gemara, Rav Nachman will tell you that even if the thick part of the radish is in the ground, you would still be allowed to yank it out of the ground, because again, even if the dirt gets moved around, it doesn't matter, because that's a shinui. That's not a normal way of moving dirt. So therefore, lahalacha, Rav Nachman would end up retracting from that position. Okay. So
but now, Rabbi, yeah. In the fig example, I said to myself, I'm putting the fig in the straw before Shabbos, but I am definitely going to take it out for lunch.
You're saying that you set it aside from beforehand. So that's a different issue. Meaning that,
so they're looking here where I did not do that.
Correct. Correct. Again, we're going to hopefully in the next two prukim get into a lot more detail regarding the parameters and the scope of Hilchos Mukta, but we'll see. You know, certain items you can designate before Shabbos, certain items you can't, right? So we'll see as we go along. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah, Machat Shel Yad Litol, but we said that you can take a needle to remove a splinter or a thorn, even though, again, needles typically are used for sewing, for weaving, but you can use it to remove a splinter. So the Gemara says, Shalach Le Rava Berei Derabal Rav Yosef Yilamdenu Rabbeinu Machat Shenitel Charara O Uktza Mahu. So they posed the question to Rav Yosef. They said, in other words, what would the halacha be on Shabbos? If, let's say, I have a needle, and the needle is perfectly fine to remove the splinter, but the problem is that the needle is missing the eye, or it's missing the point. Maybe it's not as sharp, or it's not fully formed. Would that still be mutter to carry? So the Gemara says, Amar lei tini suah, we learned in a Mishnah, machat shel yad litol ba'es hakotz, v'chima ichbas leila kotz bein nekuva levein she'en nekuva. Our Mishnah told us that I can use a needle, I can carry a needle on Shabbos to remove a splinter, so who cares if the needle has an eye, if it doesn't have an eye, if it's fully formed, as long as the needle can do its job of removing a splinter, why do I care if the needle is fully formed, if it has the right hole, if it has the right point? None of that matters as long as it can remove the splinter. So the Gemara says, okay, but esive machat shenitel charara o ukta tahora. The Gemara says, hang on one second. But we have a din when it comes to Hilchos Tumah Vetara, that if a needle is not fully functional, this is a general halach when it comes to Tumas Kelim, we've spoken about this a lot in this Masechta before, which is that if a kli is not fully functional, then by definition, it cannot be Mekabel Tumah. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. You just told me that a needle that doesn't have the eye or doesn't have the point fully sharpened, but it's enough to remove a splinter, I'm allowed to carry that on Shabbos. But if that's the case, then how come that same needle is not Mekabel Tumah, right? In other words, the definition of Kabbalas Tumah usually depends on whether an item is functional or not. So if you're telling me that this item has a use, even though it's not a fully formed needle, but it's enough to remove a splinter, then why does the Mishnah in Kalim say that this needle is not enough to be Mekabel Tumah? It should be Mekabel Tumah if it's able to remove a splinter. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a good question. Amar Abaye, Tumah Shabbos Karamis, Tumah Kli Maaseh Bo'inan, L'inyin Shabbos Midi Dechazi Bo'inan, V'hanami Chazi L'mishkala Bakotz. Comes Abaye and says that you're working with two different standards here. The standards for Hilchos Shabbos and the standards for Hilchos Tumah are vastly different. When the Torah describes the concept of Hilchos Tumah for Kelim, the Torah uses the words Kli Maaseh. It needs to be a functional utensil. If it's anything short of that, if it's not fully functional in the most ideal state, then it doesn't qualify as a kli and it's not mekabel tumah. Whereas when it comes to Shabbos, you don't need it to be operating on the highest level that the kli normally operates. As long as it has some kind of functionality, like in this case, it can remove a splinter, that is enough to allow you to carry it on Shabbos. So the Gemara says you can't really ask a question from Hilchos Tumah to Hilchos Shabbos because they're operating with two different sets of rules. That's according to Abaye. Amar Rava, so Rava says, no, it's not true. Manda Kamosev, Shabir Kamosev. Rava says, no. The original question that was contrasting Shabbos to Tumah was in fact a valid question. Why? Rava says that it's not true. Rava says that really Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Tumas Kalim are much more, you know, linked and connected than we thought originally. He says if it's not called a needle for the purposes of Tumah, then it's not called a needle for the purposes of Shabbos, and you should not be allowed to carry it. So the Gemara says, but hang on one second. If that's the case, Meisvei Machad Bein Nekuva Bein She'ena Nekuva Mutter L'Talat L'Abbas Shabbos V'Lo Amru Nekuva Ela L'Hinyan Tumah Bilvad. The Gemara now turns around based on the statement we made earlier and asks against Rava and says, but doesn't the Mishnah say that regardless of whether the needle has the sharp point or whether it has the eye or whether it's fully functional, you're allowed to carry it on Shabbos, again, assuming that it can remove the splinter. The only ramification of a needle being fully functional or not fully functional is, as we said before, in the realm of Hilchos Tumas Kalim, whether the kli is Mekabel Tumas. So this Mishnah says explicitly, right, that the definition of Tumah for Kalim and the definition of what's called a kli for the purpose of carrying on Shabbos are vastly different. How could Rava possibly ignore this? This is an explicit statement from the Gemara earlier. It's also from a Tosefta in Kalim. How could Rava possibly ignore this statement? So the Gemara says, no. Tirgama Abaye Aliba de Rava Begol Miaskinan Zimnin de Mimlech Alayu Umashvilu Humana Avalhecha de Nita Charara O Ukta Adam Zorka Levin Grutaos comes Abaye and actually defends Rava's position. And he explains that we're talking about a case of a needle which has not been fully formed. It's really just like a piece of scrap metal. It hasn't really been made into a needle at all yet. And sometimes a person will decide to take this little, you know, thin piece of scrap metal and make it into a needle. However, if I have a piece of scrap metal and now this scrap metal has lost its point or lost its sharpness or lost the eye of the metal, no one's going to decide to turn that into a needle. You're just going to throw that into the trash. You're going to throw that away with all the other pieces of scrap metal. So the Gemara's answer to this question is that we thought we were talking about a needle that wasn't like fully sharpened, and now we have this whole question about how does Hilchos Tumah square with Hilchos Shabbos. But the Gemara is saying that we actually misunderstood the case. The case that we're talking about here is way before this piece of metal is made into a needle. We're talking about a piece of scrap metal that hasn't been made into anything yet. And as long as it's a piece of scrap metal and you haven't, and now the metal has lost its edge, it's lost its point, no one's going to turn that into a needle at all. So in that context, the Gemara says, that's where we have a comparison between Shabbos and Tumah. Everyone will agree that if I have a piece of scrap metal and there's no way to turn that into a needle, then number one, I cannot carry that on Shabbos, and number two, that piece of metal will not become Tameh. However, once we've advanced beyond that point and we've already formed it into a needle, and now we're trying to figure out, is it sharp enough, is it not sharp enough, then we may have a contrast between Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Tumah. Okay. So, We're not talking about carrying as in hotza'ah. This is a question regarding Hilchos Mukta, right? This could be in my own house. This, right? Yeah.
If it's not a kli, does it still have a din of Mukta?
Again, that's part of the question that we're trying to figure out here. We're trying to figure out what exactly is the level of similarity between Hilchos Tumas Kalim and Hilchos Shabbos.
I understand, but something that is not a clear utensil,
yeah,
should have a deep mukta on it.
Again, it depends. If it's functional enough that it can do something on Shabbos, then maybe. Because again, we just saw on the Gemara,
once you use it to pull out a splinter, it becomes a clear.
Correct. It becomes a kli for Hilchos Shabbos, not necessarily for Hilchos Tumah. That's the point. Remember, because
now we're dealing with Shabbos.
Right. I understand that, but I'm saying.
So if there was a need that the point was broken.
Yeah.
Would it be mukta?
If the point was broken and there was no way to remove a splinter, then it would be mukta. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the Gemara now continues. The Gemara says, Asuve Yanuka, Rav Nachman Asir v'Rav Sheshes Shari. The Gemara now discusses a case of what's called Asuve Yanuka. Asuve Yanuka was a practice that they used to do where they would basically take babies who were just born, they would put them into these almost like straight jackets, essentially, because they wanted to straighten their limbs. There was this concern that their limbs were all floppy and they weren't, they weren't growing in properly. So they had this process where they would put this kind of a straight jacket over the baby to align the limbs properly. And the question the Gemara is addressing addressing here is whether this is mutter on Shabbos, because this, you know, ostensibly is a problem of refuah. You're healing or fixing, so to speak, the baby. Is that mutter on Shabbos? So it's a machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Shesha. So what's the logic here? Amar Rav Nachman, I mean, Allah Rav Nachman says, how do I know that this should be usher? This Nan, the Mishnah told us earlier, in Osin, Apiktavizin Vishabbos, we saw earlier in the Masechta that a person is not permitted on Shabbos to take what's called Apiktavizin, which is some kind of a drug which induces vomiting. So in other words, if let's say, for example, a person, ate something which wasn't agreeing with them, now you want to drink some kind of a potion, some kind of a drink that's going to cause you to vomit, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. In fact, we saw in the Gemara earlier that, you know, that even during the weekday, that might be a problem because it's like Baal Teshachtu, it's disgusting, but certainly on Shabbos, it's a problem of refuah. So Rav Nachman says the same way that you're not allowed to drink a drug-inducing, a vomit-inducing drug on Shabbos because it's gonna basically empty out your system, and it's a problem of refuah, you're also not allowed to align the baby's limbs on Shabbos because it's a problem of refuah. So how does Rav Sheshes respond to that? Rav Sheshes, he says, no, hasam lav orche, hacha orche. Rav Sheshes says, no, the difference is that in the case of the drug that induces vomiting, that's not a normal thing to take. So that's why it's going to be a problem on Shabbos, whereas straining out the baby's limbs apparently was considered to be very normal. That was considered to be something which was normal to do, and therefore Rav Sheshes says that would be mutter to do on Shabbos. Amar Rav Sheshes menam. So then Rav Sheshes turns around and says, "How do I know that this is mutter? This not." And this is the reason why the Gemara is quoting this here, because it's contrasting it to this case. Machat shel yad lito ba'asakotz. So Rav Sheshes says, "I'm allowed, again based on our Mishnah we saw yesterday, I'm allowed to take a needle on Shabbos to remove a splinter." So that's also refuah oriented. So Rav Sheshes says, if the Mishnah is allowing us to remove a splinter, so why can't I align the baby's limbs? It's the same thing. It's both refuah oriented. The Gemara says, no, that's not. So the Gemara rejects that. Rav Nachman, hasam pukit, hachalo pukit. Rav Nachman says, that's not a good proof, because in the case of the thorn, right, the thorn is not something which is intrinsic. It's not attached to your body. It's something which you want to remove, which you want to get out. That's mutter on Shabbos. Whereas when it comes to aligning the baby's limbs, that is a fundamental tikkun. You're trying to enhance the actual body of the baby, to fix the limbs of the baby. Therefore, that's going to be a problem on Shabbos. Okay. The Mishnah now says, Kaneshel Zis. So let's say I have a reed that was used as part of an olive press.
Rabbi, one second. I have a question for you. So if somebody dislocates something on Shabbos,
so that's going to be different. That's going to be different because that's probably sakana. This is not. This case is not a case of sakana. This was a case. Gotcha. This was some kind of a medical practice where they would straighten the baby's limbs or something like that. Yeah.
Dedicate this Mishnah today's the Yortzeit of Orach Chaim
HaKadosh. I know it's the Yortzeit of the Orach Chaim today. That's right. Tesvav Thomas. That's right. Okay, yeah. We will dedicate our learning to Rav Chaim ben Attar. Okay. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Kanesh shel zesim, im yesh kesher berosho mekabel tuma, v'im lav ein mekabel tuma, bein kach nitel b'shabbos. The Mishnah tells us, if I have this reed that was used as part of the olive press, it was used to press the olives, right? In other words, or to squeeze out all of the olive oil. So if you have a little knot on top of the reed, then it's mekabel tuma. If you don't have that knot on top of the reed, then it's not mekabel tuma. But regardless of whether you have the knot on top of the reed, you are permitted to carry the kli on Shabbos, to carry the reed on Shabbos. The Gemara asks, Amai, pshute kliyetsu, uf shute kliyets in a mekablin tuma. Why is it that this stick, this reed that was used in the olive press, assuming that it has a knot on top, why is it mekablin tuma? Isn't this a classic example of what's called pshute kliyets? Pshute kliyets means, if I have a wooden kli, but it's flat, in other words, it doesn't have a base kibul or a receptacle, right? A stick, by definition, does not have a receptacle. So the halacha is that when it comes to pshute kliyets, when it comes to wooden utensils are only mekabel tuma if they have a base kibul. If you have a metal kli, so metal kelim are mekabel tuma even if they're flat. Even a flat slab of metal is mekabel tuma. But when it comes to a wooden kli, it needs to have a receptacle. How could our Mishnah say that, oh, if I have a knot on top of the stick that I'm using in the olive press, that it's mekabel tuma? It's not true. Isn't that called pshute kliyets? Why is that mekabel tuma? So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. The Gemara says, pshute kliyets ain't mekabel tuma, my taima, dumya desakbin. Why is it, in other words, what's the source for this idea that if I have a flat slab of wood that it's not mekabel tuma? The answer is because we derive the halachos of tuma for wooden kelim from the halacha of a sack, from a sackcloth. And just as a sackcloth has a receptacle, obviously can hold things, so too a wooden kli is only mekabel tuma if it can hold something. So the Gemara explains, Tana Mishmei de Rabbi Nechemya, b'sha'a shem ahapich b'zisim, hovcho v'roebo, comes Rabbi Nechemya and explains opinions that the reason why this stick is mekabel tuma is because it actually does have a receptacle. It does have a base kibble. How does it have a receptacle if it's just a stick? So Rabbi Nechemya says, because when you turn it over, they used to have this little cavity on the top where they would see how much oil filled up on the top part of the stick. So that was considered enough to act as a receptacle to allow this stick, to allow this cleat to be mekabel tuma. Okay. Then the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yossi, Omer kol akilim nitolin, chutz min amaser hagadol v'yaseit shal machareisha. Comes Rabbi Yossi and tells us that any kli in the world pretty much is mutter to carry on Shabbos, again in terms of Hilchos Mukta, aside from a maser hagadol, which is like a large saw, and a yaseit shal macharisha, which is like the blade of a plow. Those are the only two things that you're not allowed to carry. We'll see in the Gemara in a second that these types of utensils were things that required sharpening, and they could be easily damaged, and therefore people were not going to plan to use them on Shabbos, so they were almost by definition muktzah. So the Gemara explains, Amar Rav Nachman, hai uchla dekatrei kiyaseit shel macharisha damu. This sprinkler system that was used by launderers, so this also has the status of the saw and the blade, because again, it was this very expensive copper-like board that was used by launderers, where they would lay clothing on top of this copper board, and they would sprinkle water on it, so they would not allow people to use this for any other purpose, and therefore on Shabbos it was going to be mukta. Amar Abaye, charva de ushkefe, v'sakina de ashkafta, v'chatzina de nagre, kiyaseit shel macharisha damu. The same thing is true for the knife of a shoemaker and a butcher and a carpenter. Again, we mentioned this point yesterday. Anything which is considered like a specialty tool, a specialty item, like a moel's knife, a shochet's knife, a craftsman's knife, or tools that they use that are unique to their job that no one else would really use in a normal setting, are by definition muktzah, because most of the time they're not going to want other people using them. It's going to ruin it. Maybe the kli is very expensive. You're not going to want to take a shochet's knife and use it to chop your salad. They're not going to want you to do that. So therefore, the Gemara says those all fall under the same category as the blade of a plow and the saw. That, in other words, that those all those utensils are considered to be muktzah. Okay, Gemara says Tana Rabbanan, Barishona Hayu Omrim, Shlosha Kelim Nitalin B'Shabes, Miktzoa Shel Devela, Vizuama Lesitron Shel Kedera, Visakin Kitana Shaal Gabe Shulchan. Initially, when the initial takana of Hilchos Muktzah was instituted, as we'll see in a second in the Gemara, by Nechemya, so there were only three utensils that people were permitted to carry on Shabbos, which all had to do with food. For example, a knife to cut a cake of figs, and this spoon they used to use to scoop out the fat and the grease on top of a pot of food, or these small knives that they used to use that were on the table. In other words, any food-related utensil essentially was permissible. Anything else was forbidden initially. Then the Gemara says, so then what happened after that? So the Gemara says, Hitiru v'chazru v'hitiru v'chazru v'hitiru ad she'omru kol akilim nitolam b'shabes chutz bin maser hagadol v'yaseh shama acharisha. There was a historical progression until eventually we got to the point of our Mishnah, where everything is now mutter aside from the blade of the plow and the saw. So in other words, we went from virtually everything being usher in Hilchos Muktzah to virtually everything being mutter. So the question, of course, is, well, what changed? So my hitiru v'chazru v'hitiru v'chazru v'hitiru. Amar Abaye, hitiru davar shemalachto lehetto letzorach gufo. Initially, Chazal permitted you only to carry something which was a davar shemalachto leheter. It was a mutter item that you were using for its mutter purpose. This is again like the shita of Rabbi Nechemya that we spoke about yesterday. That according to him, you can only use a mutter item for its intended purpose. So that was the initial takana. Then v'chazru v'hitiru davar shemalachto leheter letzorach mekomo. Then they said, you know what? You can even use a mutter item not just for its own sake, but let's say the mutter item is on the table and you want to move it because you want to set your table. That's called letzorach mekomo. That would also be okay. And then v'chazru v'hitiru davar shemalachto liyisro letzorach gufo in letzorach mekom alo. And then there was a third halacha, which again, of course, we pass in like today, that you know, if I have a kli shemalachto liyisro, I have a hammer, I have something which is typically used in an usher setting, but I want to use it for a mutter purpose, to crack open nuts or whatever it is, so then that would be mutter. But the Gemara says at that stage, it was not mutter letzorach mekoma. So at this point in history, you were allowed to, let's say, use a hammer to crack open nuts, but you were not allowed to move a hammer if it was sitting on your table, because there was no heter of a kli shemalachto liyisro letzorach mekomo at this point, even though today lahalacha that would also be mutter. However, the Gemara says v'adayin biyado achas in b'shtei yad avlo ad she'amru kol akilim nitolin b'shabes v'afilu b'shtei yadayim. And eventually the takana kind of evolved to the point where even if the kli was so heavy that it required you to carry it with both of your hands, that's also okay. Again, the bottom line is that our Mishnah is reflective of kind of the end game. After all these progressions and historical developments of the Hilchos Mukta, we're left with this reality today where I'm allowed to pretty much carry anything I want for the most part. Again, aside from the blade of the plow and the saw, everything else is mukta, regardless of the size and how heavy it is and why I want it, why I'm moving it. Virtually everything is going to be mukta. So Amar Le Rava, so Rava pushes back. He says, Michdi, Hitiru Katane, Mali Letzorach Gufo, Mali Letzorach Makomo. Rava says, didn't we say as part of the historical progression, we said that Chazal were Chazru Vihitiru? They permitted certain things. So how come the Gemara told us that we have what seems to be an arbitrary distinction between moving a Kli Shemalachto Liyisr Letzorach Gufo versus Letzorach Makomo? We said before in the Gemara that, you know, in other words, at this stage in history, I was allowed to take a hammer to crack open a nut, but I was not allowed to move a hammer if it was sitting on my table and I wanted to set the table. The question is, what's the difference? Once Chazal are allowing you to use a hammer to crack open a nut, why wouldn't they allow you to just move the hammer if it's sitting on your table? What's the difference? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela Amar Rava, Hitiru Darash Malachto Leheter, Bein Letzorach Gufo, Uvein Letzorach Makomo, the Chazru Vihitiru Mechama Letzel, the Chazru Vihitiru Darash Malachto Leheter, Letzorach Gufo, the Gemara adds that there was actually two other steps in this historical progression of Hilchos Mukta. One is what we call Mechama Letzel. Chama Letzel means that if I have an item which was left out in the sun or left out in the rain and it's going to get ruined, so normally the halacha is that you are not allowed to move that on Shabbos. So for example, if I realize that I left out a very expensive, a phone, a laptop, or whatever, out in the sun or out in the rain on Shabbos, you are not allowed to move that on Shabbos. However, if it's a kli shemalachto leheter, if it's a mutter type of a kli, then you would be permitted to move that out of the sun and move it to the shade. But if it's a usher type of a kli, then you would not be allowed to do that. And the other point that they're mentioning here, which is similar to what we mentioned before, is that again that it would only be mutter to move a kli shemalachto leiser if it's a light enough to move with one person. But if it requires two people to move, then it would be a problem. Again, until we got to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, as we mentioned before, is the end result of all of these different, you know, stages in history of the progression of Hilchos Mukta. And the bottom line is that Bezman Hazeh, virtually everything in Hilchos Mukta is mutter unless it's something like the blade of a plow in the saw. So the Gemara is basically just giving you all the background about how we got to our Mishnah. How do we get here in the first place? So the Gemara is telling you what all the background is. Okay. So the Gemara now asks, Isi ve'abai, medocha, im yesh bashum So we actually quoted this yesterday, right? The Gemara says that if I have a mortar and pestle, it's only permissible to carry that on Shabbos if there's garlic in it. But if there's no garlic, people might think that I'm going to be using it for malacha, for tochein, that it's going to be a problem. The question is, why is that a problem? Didn't our Mishnah just tell me that anything that's not called, anything which is not a saw or the blade of a plow is mutter to carry on Shabbos? So what's wrong with carrying a mortar and pestle even if there's no garlic in it? So the Gemara says, you're right. Must be that we're talking about a case where I'm trying to salvage the mortar and pestle. I left the mortar and pestle out of the sun, and I want to move it to the shade. That's going to be a problem, because as we mentioned already before, this heter of moving something from the sun to the shade does not extend to a kli shemalachto liyisr. And obviously, by definition, a mortar and pestle is a kli shemalachto liyisr because its primary function is to grind up things inside of it, which is a problem of tochin. So because it's a kli shemalachto liyisr, there is no heter of mechama letzel. If you left your mortar and pestle out on the sun, you are not allowed to move that on Shabbos. So the Gemara tries again. We also had this case yesterday. We're talking about a guy who on Yontif decides to chop up meat in his mortar and pestle. The Gemara says, once you've chopped up your meat in the mortar and pestle on Yontif, you're no longer allowed to carry it because at that point it no longer has a use anymore, right? Because you already chopped up the meat. The question again is, but why is it not mutter to move if, again, the Mishnah said the only things that you're not allowed to move are the blade of a plow and the saw? So once again, the Gemara says, Hachanami mechama letzel, the same idea, because again, you left your meat cutting board, your mortar and pestle out in the sun, so again, because it's a kli shemalach to liyisr, you would not be allowed to move it even on Yontif. Okay, the Gemara now says, Amar Rabbi Chanina, b'menechem ben Chachalya nishnes mishnezo, t'chsev b'yamim ha'hima ra'isi bihuda dorachim gitos b'shabas u'mevi'im ha'aremos. This Mishnah, these halachos of Mukta that we've been discussing until now, were instituted in the days of Nehemiah, right, from Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah. Nehemiah was one of the people who came up with Ezra from Galus Bavel back to Eretz Yisrael, and during the time period of Ezra and Nehemiah, there was a tremendous amount of Chilul Shabbos that was taking place amongst B'nai Yisrael, amongst many other Averos, but Chilul Shabbos was one of the primary Averos that was happening, and basically basically what happened was Nehemiah came up with all these very, very machmir, very stringent takanos of Hilchos Muktzah because he wanted to make sure that people were started keeping Shabbos again. So today, once people have been, you know, have become more accustomed to, you know, to observing Shabbos properly, so a lot of those takanos have fallen away. But initially, when Nehemiah first instituted Hilchos Muktzah, there was such a, you know, there was such rampant Chilul Shabbos going on that he had to really kind of throw the book at everyone and basically make everything usher with the few exceptions that we mentioned earlier. Okay. The Gemara now says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Kanin umaklos glustero medocha kulan kodem hataras kelim nishnu. So the following four utensils, specifically reeds and a staff and a bolt and a mortar and pestle, in terms of whether those are permitted or forbidden to carry on Shabbos for muktzah purposes, all four of these halachos were taught prior to the heter of carrying most kelim on Shabbos. Meaning the four mishnayos that we're about to, that the Gemara is about to discuss were all said over. You know, after Nehemiah's, you know, takana of muktzah, but before the, you know, before the final development of Hilchos Muktzah that we have today. So, for example, the Gemara explains kanin disnan lo sidur hakanin velo netilasa ndocha es haShabbos. It's a Mishnah in Meseches Menachos where the Mishnah discusses the lechem hapanim. Right, the lechem hapanim was placed on the different shelves of the shulchan, and there were these reeds, these like golden reeds that were put in between each layer to keep the bread airy and to make sure that, you know, that the bread got enough oxygen. But the Mishnah Menachos says that putting those reeds, putting those rods, you know, in between the different layers of the shulchan of the bread was not docha Shabbos. You were not allowed to move those rods on Shabbos. Again, the Gemara is assuming here that this Mishnah in Menachos was stated before the final development of Hilchos Muktzah, which would imply that Bazman Azeh, if we had to be Samikdash today, it would be mutter to move those reeds because, again, we hold like the Maskana of the Mishnah. Then we said Maklos, so what are these, the staff, this non? Maklos dakin chalokin hayusham umanicho aksefo v'yakosef chaveru v'sola umavshin. It's a Mishnah in Pesachim that describes the process of skinning and flaying the carbon Pesach. The Mishnah in Pesachim says that they used to have these thin rods or these thin sticks where they would basically take one end and put it on their shoulder, and they would put the other end on the other person's shoulder, and they would suspend the meat of the carbon, and they would skin it and they would flay it. So again, the Mishnah is assuming that you know that these reeds and sticks are going to be a problem. The Gemara says, "V'amar Rabbi Elazar, arba'as or shecholios b'Shabbos maniach yado al kasev chaviro v'yad chaviro al ksefo v'sola umavshit." If erev Pesach were to fall out on a Shabbos, so instead of using these rods or sticks to suspend the meat of the carbon, they would just have to use their own hands. So you'd have Reuven would put his hand on Shimon's shoulder, and then they would suspend the meat by their hands, and then they would skin it that way. So the assumption obviously is that on Shabbos these reeds and sticks are going to be a problem. Okay, then we said glustera, these bolts. So what are these bolts exactly? This not in the Mishnah Meseches Kelim. Nagar sheyish berosho glustera. Rabbi Hoshua omer shomta min Pesach zev esola bechavero b'Shabbes. Rabbi Tarfon omer harehu kechol akelim umitaltel bechatzer. So there's a machlukas in the Mishnah in Kelim regarding, for example, let's say I'm a carpenter and I have these bolts that I'm putting onto the hinges of my door. So Rabbi Hoshua says you can remove the bolt from one hinge from one door and put it onto another door on Shabbos, meaning to say the bolts are not muktzah, they're totally fine to move around. Whereas Rabbi Tarfon says that these bolts basically have the status of any other regular kli, and therefore you would be allowed to carry it in a chatzir, obviously not in a Rosh Hasharabim, but you can carry it within your own chatzir. So in other words, according to Rabbi Hoshua, you would not be allowed to do a regular form of tiltel. In other words, according to Rabbi Hoshua, the only way that you're allowed to move around this bolt is you have to kind of figure out some kind of a shinui to slide it out and slide it into a different hinge, whereas according to Rabbi Tarfon, this bolt is just like a regular kli that you're allowed to carry under any circumstance. And then medocha hadamer, in the case of the mortar and pestle, we already spoke about. So the Gemara now explains. So again, just to recap what we said, these four kelim that we just mentioned, the Gemara was assuming until now, all four of these mishnayos that we were referencing must have been stated prior to our Mishnah, before our Mishnah innovated, you know, the bottom line halacha of muktzah, where everything pretty much is mutter in Hilchos Muktzah. These mishnayos were written, you know, back in the day of Nehemiah, when he forbade almost everything. That's why these items are aser, implying, of course, that Bazman Azeh, all these things would be mutter. But the Gemara pushes back on that. The Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Mimai, Dilma Liolam Emelecha La'achar HaTorath Kelim Nishnu. Maybe you can argue that all four of these Mishnayos were taught even Bazman Azeh. Maybe these Mishnayos that are forbidding the rods and the reeds and the bolts and the mortar and pestles were taught Bazman Azeh when most things are really mutter. So that if most things are mutter, why are these things specifically aser? So the Gemara explains, Kanim, Taimamai, mishum iapushe, b'hai purta lo miapash. The whole reason why we have the reeds there in the first place, right, but you know, between the lechem apanim, is to prevent the, you know, to prevent the lechem apanim from going bad, from rotting. But you know, the assumption is that if you just leave them there over Shabbos for that small amount of time, nothing is really going to happen to the lechem apanim by leaving the rods there. Maklos efshe k'Rabbi Elazar. When it comes to the case of the maklos, the reeds that we use for the Karban Pesach, so maybe we can rely on the opinion of Rabbi Elazar that we quoted on the bottom of the previous Amud, where he says that, no, maybe in the case of Erev Pesach that falls out on a Shabbos, you're not allowed to use the reeds. Because again, remember, according to Rabbi Elazar, you have, if Erev Pesach is on a Shabbos, you can't just, you know, hang the Karban Pesach by the reeds and skin it. You have to put it over your hand and, you know, put your hand on your friend's shoulder and skin it that way. So you could argue that Rabbi Elazar is going to say that it's a problem. Glustera kid Rabbi Yana, the case of the bolt, so maybe you could say that we rely on Rabbi Yanai, the Amar Rabbi Yanai, but Chatzer She'enam U'revis Askinan, right? That when it comes to, that maybe we're talking about a Chatzer that does not have an Eruv. That's why you're not allowed to carry the bolt. Rabbi Yehoshua Savar Tocha Pesach Kilifnim Damei V'kametaltel Mana Debatim B'Chatzer Rabbi Tarfon Savar Tocha Pesach Kilachut Damei U'mana D'Chatzer B'Chatzer Kametaltel. So again, the Machlukas between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Tarfon that we cited earlier is not a Machlukas about whether you're allowed to slide the bolt out and carry it normally, or whether you can only slide out the bolt with a shinui. No. The machlokas here is if I'm carrying something in a chatzer that does not have an eruv chatzerus around it, the question is, what is the status of the place where I'm carrying it? So Rabbi Yehoshua holds that if I am tocha pesach, if I'm within the doorway of the chatzer, that's as if I'm inside, which means that I'm carrying a kli of the house in the chatzer, which is a problem. Whereas Rabbi Tarfon thinks that no, when you're within the doorway, it's as if you're outside, and therefore I'm carrying a kli that's related to the chatzer in the chatzer, which is mutter on Shabbos. In other words, according to this new version of the Machlokas between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Tarfon, this is not so much a question of, do I need to use a shinui to slide the bolt out of the door or not? The question really here is where am I carrying this item in the first place? Am I carrying a bolt that is typically used for outside in my house, or am I carrying it outside of the house? That's the question. So according to Rabbi Yehoshua, when you carry something within a door frame, that's as if you're carrying it inside, and since this bolt is meant to be used on the outside of the house, carrying it inside is a problem, whereas according to Rabbi Tarfon, it's as if you're carrying it on the outside. And then finally, the Gemara says, Medocha Rabbi Nechemyahi, and maybe the reason why the mortar and pestle is usher to carry is because that relies on the opinion of Rabbi Nechemyah, which we've already cited a few times, where Rabbi Nechemyah holds that the only types of kelim that you're allowed to carry on Shabbos are a kli shemalachtu lehetu letzorach gufo. Remember, again, as you mentioned this already yesterday, Rabbi Nechemyah has a very, very machmir opinion here, where he says that you're only allowed to carry a mutter kli when it's used for its mutter purpose. Again, we obviously don't possibly like Rabbi Nechemyah, but maybe one could argue, again, the point of this Gemara was just kind of deflect what we initially suggested. We initially thought that maybe, you know, these four utensils were, you know, the halachas were stated before the ultimate development of Hilchos Muktzah. The Gemara is now deflecting that. The Gemara is saying it's not necessarily the case. You can argue that these four cases of the reed and the pole and the bolt and the mortar and pestle were stated after the fact, after this Mishnah was stated, but for a variety of quirks, for these, you know, specific reasons for in each case, we're going to have to say that, you know, in these cases, they're still going to be problematic.